It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Yes. Oh. Hello.
Hello. It is Monday, October 24th, 2022. I am hanging out in the office, so you're getting another of what I've been labeling, at least internally in my folder and in my bookmarks, is the early edition. Well, recording it the night before. So I hope you're still hanging around, at least enjoying the Dubious Goals Committee. I return the week of Thanksgiving we should have off, and the week of Christmas we should have off. So I'll do those shows live, and or at least some of those shows live, and kind of try and reevaluate everything. As you can tell, it's kind of a roller coaster, trying to figure out what's the best way to go. So anyway, I just want to let you know, thank you for being around, listening to the show. I'll try and bring you all the news that we can fit into the show. So we begin with death and destruction across the world. Hurricane Roslyn is battering Mexico's Pacific coast. Hurricane made landfall in western Mexico on Sunday, causing heavy rain, flash floods, and landslides. Roslyn was a Category 3 hurricane and came ashore in Nayarit State with maximum winds of 195 kilometers an hour, or 120 miles per hour. The hurricane has since been downgraded to a tropical cyclone and is expected to dissipate overnight. Images of the aftermath show flooded roads and upturned vehicles with collapsed roofs and damaged homes in the worst affected area of Tequila, something like that. Further south along the coast is Sayulita, which people were pictured wading through the clearing mud from streets in the area. Flash flooding and power outages also hit the town of Puerto Vallarta in neighboring Jalisco State, but only minor damage was caused, according to the state's governor. Now, the story is accompanied with some photos showing people already, while the flooding is floodwaters are receding, they're out there with shovels, shoveling all the mud off of the sidewalk and away down, you know, into the street, away from the building. And a lot of flooding. Let's see if this guy gives us any insight.
Hurricane Roslyn strengthened very quickly on Saturday to become a major Category 4 storm over the very warm waters off the southwest coast of Mexico. Now, this system is expected to make landfall as a major system early on Sunday across southwest Mexico, we think around western Nayarit State. And thereafter, it'll push inland and weaken rapidly. And the reason it's going to weaken rapidly is because the system will encounter very mountainous, rugged terrain. So there'll be remnants of a few showers and storms as we move through Monday and Tuesday. But certainly some concerns early on Sunday as Roslyn makes landfall as a major storm in western Nayarit, not far from the tourist resort of Puerto Vallarta. It's likely to bring damaging winds for a while, torrential flooding rain and significant storm surge with some damaging waves. We will keep you posted.
All right. Thanks a lot, BBC. Okie doke. What else is going on? Where else are people dying? Well, all over the world. Death toll in Sudan. Tribal clashes rises to at least 220. We've talked about this a couple of times. The death toll from days of tribal fighting in southern Sudan has risen to at least 220, making this one of the deadliest episodes of ethnic violence in recent years. Fighting in Blue Nile Province, which borders Ethiopia and South Sudan, reignited this month over a land dispute. It pits the Hausa people, who have origins across West Africa, against the Berta community. The tension escalated on Wednesday and Thursday in the town of Wada al-Mahi on the border with Ethiopia. The unrest added to the woes of a country mired in civil conflict and political chaos. Fath Arahaman Bakit, Director General of the Blue Nile Health Ministry, said on Sunday that officials have encountered at least 220 dead. He said the figure could be much higher because medical teams have not been able to reach the epicenter of the fighting. Bakit said the first humanitarian and medical convoy reaching Wad al-Mahi late Saturday to assess the situation included counting the huge number of bodies and the dozens wounded. In such clashes, everyone loses, he said. We hope it ends soon and never happens again. But we need strong political, security, and civil interventions to achieve that goal. Footage from the scene shows burned houses and charred bodies. Others showed women and children fleeing on foot. Many houses have been burned in the fighting, which displaced about 7,000 people who fled to the city of Rusiris, and others have gone to neighboring provinces, according to the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. If you can imagine Sudan and Ethiopia, Blue Nile's just kind of right there in the middle of it all. The coup has derailed the country's short-lived transition to democracy after nearly three decades of repressive rule under Omar al-Bashir, who was removed in April 2019 by a popular uprising. So, it's kind of what we've got. There's a 25-minute-long documentary kind of thing behind the tribal tensions in Sudan, if you want to read about that. You can find it on YouTube. Let me give you the title and stuff. All you need to search is Al Jazeera and Rising Tribal Tensions in Sudan. Or if you just look at the Al Jazeera English channel, you can see all that kind of news. They've got a lot of good videos there. In Somalia, staying in Horn, going to a little further into the Horn of Africa, attack on hotel in Somalia's Kismayo ends with 9 civilians dead. A car laden with explosives rammed the gate of the hotel and was followed by an attack claimed by the Al-Shabaab armed group. An attack on the hotel in the center of the port city of Kismayo in southern Somalia killed 9 civilians on Sunday before security forces killed the gunman. Security officers killed 3 of the attackers and a 4th died in the bomb blast, said Yusuf Hussein Dumal, security minister for Jubaland. In the explosion, 9 people, including students and civilians, were killed, and 47 others were injured, some of them seriously, Dumal said. The hotel where the explosion happened was near a school, so many students were injured. The car laden with explosives rammed the gate of the hotel and was followed by an attack claimed by the Al-Shabaab armed group. Port City is the last to be hit, and following a resurgence of bloody attacks in recent months by the Al-Qaeda-linked organization, which has mainly targeted the capital of Mogadishu in central Somalia. Sunday's assault began at 12:45 p.m. when a booby-trapped car rammed the entrance. This isn't a government target, said police officer Abdullahi Ismail. It's just an ordinary civilian-frequented hotel. Kismayo is the commercial capital of Jubaland, a region of southern Somalia still partly controlled by Al-Shabaab, which was driven out of the urban center in 2012. So, a little sadness there. And let's talk about just one more kind of death story. Russian fighter plane crashes in Siberian city of Irkutsk. Let's see if they say it here. Nope, this is just a user submitted video on Telegram. Sometimes the videos and stories will have some information, and sometimes they won't. A Russian military plane crashed into a residential area in southern Siberia, local authorities have said. The Sukhoi Su-30 fighter aircraft landed on the two-story house in the city of Irkutsk. Regional Governor Igor Kobzev posted on Telegram. He said he was at the scene and both pilots had been killed, but no residents were hurt. According to the Russian Ministry of Emergency Situations, the jet was on a test flight when it came down. Footage on social media showed the plane diving almost vertically before crashing in a fireball, sending thick black smoke into the sky. Another video depicted firefighters putting out the blaze. Russia's State Investigative Committee said it had opened a criminal investigation into violations of air safety rules. It's the second incident of its kind in 6 days. Last Monday, an Su-34 military jet crashed into an apartment block in the southern city of Yesk, near Ukraine, killing at least 15 people. So, see what's going on there. Of course, if it's Monday, that means that it is Diwali. I always say it wrong. Anyway, it is a big festival. A big holiday. It's very, very popular. In India, India's streets and homes are lit up with colorful lanterns and glowing lamps as millions celebrate the Hindu festival of Diwali. But the celebrations are also sparking concerns about air pollution, including in Delhi. a time for feast, prayers, and fireworks. Diwali is one of the most important festivals in India. It's known as the Festival of Lights, as people illuminate oil lamps or candles to symbolize the triumph of light over darkness and good over evil. People illuminate their homes with oil lamps and draw rangolis, traditional designs made using colorful powders, outside their doors to welcome good luck and positivity into their lives. Families gather to offer prayer, light fireworks, and enjoy festive meals. People visit friends and family and exchange sweets, gifts, and good wishes. Last week was we had people visiting out of the country, and that was one of the things that was a surprise. I guess the two things. One, they were surprised that we didn't know about this holiday in Austin, Texas, and was like, yeah, we know that it's a day, but we have no idea what it's about or anything. And the other thing that was a surprise was that, this is like a big holiday. It's equivalent to, say, like, it's like as important as like a Christmas kind of holiday, is what the guys said. It was like, it was a holiday everybody took off. But then I was also, then we were surprised because, you know, when Christmas happens, at least in the U.S., it's like, unless you work, if you work at a big tech company or just a big company in general, usually you get like several days off for Christmas, kind of for the holiday. But that wasn't the case in India and Singapore and China and stuff. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that because I thought that was pretty neat and it's an exciting holiday. In Iran, huge rally in Berlin showing support for Iranian protests. About 80,000 Iranians and their supporters have marched in Berlin, German police say, in solidarity with ongoing protests in Iran. Saturday's rally in the German capital is believed to have been the biggest so far held by the Iranian diaspora. Iranians from across Europe chanted the slogans of the protesters, Women, Life, and Liberty. In Iran itself, protests triggered by the death of a young woman in custody have entered a sixth week. Mahsa Amini, 22, died after being arrested by morality police in Tehran on 13th of September for allegedly wearing her headscarf too loosely. The police denied reports that she was beaten on the head with a baton and said she suffered a heart attack. On Saturday, gatherings were held in several world capitals, including Washington, where thousands have been marching. Organizers of the Berlin rally put the number of protesters close to 100,000. Official told by the police 80,000, somewhere in that range. Their demands include more Western sanctions against Iran's Revolutionary Guard. Iranian diplomats, the protesters said, should be thrown out of Western capitals. It's breathtaking, it's amazing, one protester told the BBC. It's the first time that so many people in our nation are united, regardless of their political beliefs, before revolution and after revolution. I'm really proud. Inside Iran, authorities have cut off access to the internet in many areas, but videos have appeared on social media showing demonstrators in at least several cities. Iran's human rights activist news agency, HRANA, Hotel Romeo Alpha November Alpha, estimates that 244 protesters, including 32 children, have been killed by security forces in the crackdown. It says more than 12,500 have been detained, many of them young people and children. So, we'll have to see what happens there, but, you know, just the West is on their side. Speaking of West, East, and all of that, we got some political news here. First, France 24 gives us a story. It's a man's world. No more women leaders in China's Communist Party. The Communist Party Congress has laid bare the striking gender imbalance in the upper echelons of the Chinese political party. Let me read this again. The Communist Party Congress has laid bare the striking gender imbalance in the upper echelons of Chinese politics, with not a single woman making the 24-person Politburo for the first time in at least a quarter of a century. As Xi Jinping and his allies concentrated power over the weekend, the party's highest-ranking women leader retired. Veteran politician Sun Chunlan, a vice premier overseeing China's health policies, was absent from the Central Committee list published Saturday, meaning she had stepped down. In the world's biggest political party, which accounts for 96 million active members, women have never held much power and now hold even less. They make up just 5% of the party's new 205-member Central Committee, while the 7-member Standing Committee, the apex of China's power, remains an all-male club headed by Xi. Sun, 72, was the only woman in the former Politburo, the party's exclusive decision-making body. Often dispatched to inspect Chinese cities in the grip of surging COVID-19 outbreaks, the former party chief of Fujian Province and Tianjin municipality, became the public face of the zero COVID policy, commanding tough measures wherever she went, prompting the nickname Iron Lady. But not to be confused with Iron Goddess of Mercy, the one of the greatest, best teas you can drink, Tiguanjin. But figures like Sun are a rarity in Chinese politics, where male patronage networks and ingrained sexism have stymied the careers of promising candidates. It's a far cry from the Communist Party forefather Mao Zedong pledged that women hold up half the sky. The Chinese Communist Party's commitment to women's rights, I think, is more like a commitment to advance women's economic rights, said Minglu Chen, a senior lecturer at the University of Sydney. It's really about women should join the paid labor force. Chen added that the Communist Party is by nature a masculine and patriarchal institution, from its roots as a social movement to today. It's probably the Chinese Party of China. Well, I guess they read my mind here. China is hardly unique in its lack of women in politics. Prevailing social conservatism and repression of domestic women's rights activism have made it difficult for women to defy expectations that they'll prioritize family life over their careers. The state has played into these expectations by encouraging women to have babies to offset China's rapidly aging population. Young women have especially chafed at this, partly due to the lack of policy support for working mothers. A lot of women talk about how they can't juggle the double roles of being a good mother, wife, and worker. Most provincial officials selected for promotion have multiple higher education degrees, a prerequisite that disadvantages women. Many informal patronage networks are also established through frequent socializing at restaurants in heavily male and often boozy environments. That's alcohol. Many of Xi's former male colleagues in Zhejiang and Fujian are now Politburo members, said Victor Xi, political science professor at UC San Diego. Yet none of his previous female colleagues have made it, and not even to top provincial positions. China has low retirement ages for women, 55 for women civil servants, compared to 60 for men in the same provision, rising to 60 for women officials at deputy division level and above. Ministers are expected to retire at 65, while central leaders mostly abide by an informal age cap of 68. China introduced an informal quota system in 2001 requiring one woman at all levels of the government and party, except the Politburo, but without a proper supervision mechanism, this is lightly enforced. So, that's what's going on there. It's one of the things that I think, intersectionality and feminism, it's kind of fun to think about. It's interesting to see because it cuts across all peoples of the world, you know. Women's rights, men's rights, not really, but women's rights, just the rights of all people, human rights. It's very interesting to see how they lay across the world. The two Koreas, North Korea and South Korea, there's really just one Korea, I guess, but maybe that's an extreme position. Two Koreas exchange warning shots near sea border amid tensions. Moves come amid heightened frictions over a barrage of weapons tests by North Korea. North and South exchange warning shots off their western coast, accusing each other of breaching their maritime border. South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff said it broadcast warnings and fired warning shots to repel a North Korean merchant vessel that crossed the northern limit line, the de facto sea boundary, at approximately 3:40 a.m. local time on Monday. North Korea's military said it fired 10 rounds of artillery warning shots towards its territorial waters, where Navy and enemy movement was detected. Accused a South Korean naval ship of intruding into North Korean waters on the pretext of cracking down an unidentified, tracking down an unidentified ship. So, going back and forth with each other, tensions are high. We'll see where it goes from here. That's all we got right now. Sunak closes in on number 10 as Johnson pulls out of the race. Yeah, I don't know if you heard or saw, but we were getting close to having Boris Johnson back at the in number 10. Boris Johnson has withdrawn from the race to be Conservative leader, leaving Rishi Sunak within touching distance of becoming Prime Minister. After senior Tories warned a Johnson comeback would lead to chaos by the end of the week, the former Prime Minister admitted he didn't have the backing of enough MPs to lead a united party. Johnson, who never officially launched his campaign, said on Sunday night he believed he could have delivered a Conservative victory in 2024, but it was simply not the right thing to do and not the right time. In a tweet shortly after, Sunak said Britain was grateful to Johnson for delivering Brexit and the vaccine rollout and for taking on Vladimir Putin. something to remember here is all the people here, these are all Tories, and they're all super conservative folks. So this is a bit like trying to decide if you want do you want Rush Limbaugh or Newt Gingrich to be the leader of the country for a little while. It's like, not really happy with either, really, to be honest. All right, so that's going on there. There is so much news going on, but I do want to take a minute and remind you and thank you for listening to News to Me. This is a show that airs every Monday through Friday at 1900 UTC. At 1930 UTC, every goddamn day, is the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe. It's a fun show that happens. It's 30 minutes long. We follow around Tobe and doing his dubious things. Sometimes there are synthesizers and fun electronics projects. Pippa shows up. Hamburgers are sometimes there. Sometimes they're up high. Sometimes they're not. And Ghost Bear, he's there all along. So definitely check that out. Tune into that if you can. Yeah, and really just hit equal sign or go to anonradio.net. There's a ton of shows. Monday is a fun time. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Just every day of the week has some kind of fun shows going on. So check it out. DJ Snowdusk has a great show. Internet Noises on Tuesday's fun. Harry Larry does fun shows. It's just everybody does so many. There's so many great shows on Anon Radio. So check it out. Just tune into it during your work day. It's a good time. All right. Let's get into, or I guess let me play a story for you about Chad.
Normalcy is slowly returning to Chad following daily protests on Thursday. Hundreds of demonstrators turned out in the capital, N'Djamena, and elsewhere on Thursday to mark the date when the military had initially promised to hand over power, a spell that has been extended for another 2 years. We weren't expecting that. We thought it was a peaceful demonstration and people would protest peacefully. Instead, it was a declaration of war against our party. It was a group of 100 people who came armed with knives, tires, and more with gasoline. You saw the damage. We were in a bit of minority and we couldn't do anything. The Chadian Prime Minister Saleh Kezabo updated the official death toll to around 50 on Thursday night, saying most fatalities occurred in N'Djamena and the cities of Mundu and Kumra, while more than 300 people were injured. These insurgents bear the heavy responsibility of around 50 dead and nearly 300 wounded, especially in N'Djamena, but also in Mundu, Doba and Kumra, following the extremely serious abuses experienced this morning, has taken the following precaution measures: the establishment of a curfew from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. until the total restoration of order in N'Djamena, Mundu, Doba, and Kumra. Kezabo also announced the suspension of all public activities of major opposition groups, including the Transformers Party and civil society coalition Wakitama. The government had previously put the death toll at 30, including 10 members of the security forces.
Yepper. So that's what's going on there in Chad. Protests, all sorts of stuff. Since there were a lot of names and stuff I wasn't really familiar with, I figured, hey, let's try playing some of these stories that do have video now that I can pipe the audio in. Let me know on B-Board or B-Board's probably the easiest. You can email me to mnw@sdf, or just mnw on the cluster. It'll get to me. But yeah, so anyway, that's going on in Chad there. Salman Rushdie has lost sight in one eye, Agent Andrew Wiley says. Author Salman Rushdie has lost vision in one eye and the use of one hand following the stabbing in New York in August, his agent says. He has about 15 more wounds in his chest, Andrew Wiley, a New York-based agent, told Spain's El País newspaper. It was a brutal attack. Mr. Wiley said he could not disclose the novelist's whereabouts. The assault occurred at an event in New York State. Mr. Rushdie has long faced death threats from his 1988 novel, The Satanic Verses. Some Muslims regard the book as blasphemous. The man charged over the attack, a U.S.-born Haiti Matar, 24, has pleaded not guilty to attempted murder. He's lost the sight of one eye, Mr. Wiley said in his interview with El Pais. He had three serious wounds in the neck. One hand is incapacitated because the nerves in his arm were cut. Asked if the author was in hospital, Mr. Wiley replied, I can't give any information about his whereabouts. He's going to live. That's the more important thing. The attack took place at the Chautauqua Institution in New York State on August 12th. Mr. Rushdie was about to give a speech about how the U.S. has served as a haven for writers. So, kind of a sad bit of news whenever an author gets attacked like this. He faced death threats, and the then-Iranian leader, Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, issued a fatwa, or a decree, calling for Mr. Rushdie's assassination, placing a $3 million bounty on the author's head. The fatwa remains active, and although Iran's government has distanced itself from the decree, a quasi-official Iranian religious foundation added a further $500,000 to the reward in 2012. Mr. Rushdie was born in India in 1947. He was sent to a boarding school in England before studying in the University of Cambridge. In 2007, he was knighted for services to literature. And so, anyway, it's just really sad. One of the things I do when I get sad is I'll just doom scroll through like TikTok videos, and there was a really sad a fellow on there who was attacked with a sword at a homeless shelter. He's serving food, and this guy started calling him a white devil, and when he told him he couldn't say that and he needed to, you know, he could finish his meal at the soup kitchen but he had to leave, he said, well, let me just go get my things. And so he went to the locker room and got his private stuff. When he came out, he had two swords, and he started hacking at the guy. And the way he described it was really heartbreaking. He was like, I was kicking at him and had my legs out, and he was slashing at him. And so they were just started like, he was just like, the way he described it was like, they just started falling, it just started falling apart. And it just to hear someone describe their limbs as falling apart is pretty traumatic and awful. But anyway, then he held up his hands to guide his face, and he's like, and then seeing my arms fall apart, I was like, oh my gosh. So anyway, the man's alive. He posted the TikTok video from his hospital bed. But anyway, it's wild out there. Sometimes bad things happen for no reason, and whether or not you wish you're dead, I don't know. I guess that depends. Oh, let's keep this energy where we're at. Let me tell you one more story. Costa Rican authorities on Sunday confirmed that German millionaire Rainer Schaller and his family were on board a small plane that crashed in the Caribbean as recovery efforts were hindered by bad weather. Two bodies of a minor and an adult were recovered on Saturday, though they haven't been identified. A public security ministry source told AFP that Schaller, adult male, 53 years old, and five other people were listed as being on the aircraft that crashed on Friday off the coast of the eastern Limon province. The German newspaper Bild had a report that Schaller, the wealthy founder of a chain of gyms called McFit, MCFIT, his partner and two children and another unnamed man were passengers on the plane. So we'll see what happens. Starting in the late 1990s with just a single gym in Würzburg, Schaller grew his low-cost McFit chain into the largest fitness group in Europe. In 2020, his company acquired the major U.S. fitness chain Gold's Gym, bringing its global footprint to more than 900 facilities on six continents. Oh, man. I'll try and get us a good story before we disappear. I'll just read you some headlines, more importantly. Ethiopia has held pro-government rallies and are denouncing the West. Two nurses were killed, and a suspect was shot in a Dallas shooting at a hospital. Was apprehended by the hospital's police officer. Yeah, we've got police officers in our hospitals. Exposure to environmental toxins may be the root of rise in neurological disorders. It's not just your imagination. A lot of people have them. And a Washington State woman survived a bear attack by punching the animal's nose. Students are wearing innovative headgear to block their ability to see their peers' papers. And there are some fun photos and videos to go along with that if you look up anti-cheating hats. Please enjoy the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe, and I'll be back soon. Also, Keiko had an outage, caused a bit of trouble in Korea. All right, bye.